Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And I'm Jay.
This is your new comic book episode for Wednesday, February 17th, 2021. A lot of good books today. Most Future State books are not among those good books. Not a surprise if you've been joining us for Future State Friday. So we're going to dive right in because there's a lot of books to talk about. But real quick before we get started, I do want to remind everybody, be sure you listen to our other episode that's out today. It's an interview with Liam Sharp, a friend of the show, incredible artist in his own right. He's got a campaign going on right now for another artist, Jack Katz, who was a contemporary of guys like Alex Raymond and Alex Toth. I mean, we're talking golden age. This guy was around and creating comics in the golden age all the way up through, still doing work today. He's an incredible artist. Liam has become friends with Jack over the years and was at Jack's house and just discovered a treasure trove of unpublished work that is absolutely incredible. It's all been collected in a book, and you owe it to yourself to go and check out this guy's art. And, you know, so often we celebrate creators after they're gone. Jack is still here. He's 93 years old, and here's a chance to give back. You know, he's living on a fixed income. You know, he's got a limited budget, and supporting this Kickstarter and getting him some cash in his pocket will let him have the freedom to continue to create even at 93 years old. So it's a great interview with Liam talking about the campaign. So be sure you go and check it out. And even if you think the campaign is not for you, you know, you don't want to get the hardcover book, you know, whatever, the art doesn't speak to you, or you just don't have the means right now to help out with the campaign, at least share it on social media so that everybody that wants this book is aware of it and gets a chance to contribute if they'd like. So let's go ahead and dive into the books. Let's start with you, Manny. What's your first title?
First title to talk about is a Marvel book. I'm excited because I never get to do Marvel books because we never get the books on time. So I'm going to go with The Immortal Hulk Flatline, written, art, and main cover by Declan Shalvey. And it's a really self-contained story. Nothing too different than what we've seen from The Immortal Hulk during his series, but it really kind of shows his day-to-day, his kind of sad boy Bruce Banner that he has to go through when after the Hulk does whatever he does at night, and how he's able to keep a day job and keep a low profile. And so but obviously there's a disconnect between them because they're both really doing their own thing. And really about this book is about them connecting. It's about them finally being able to communicate, almost having like a mediation. And it happens with the arrival of somebody from his past that actually ended up being affected by the gamma in New Mexico. This New Mexico is where they currently are. But it was really good. It was a very good dialogue. And I thought that as the conversations were going on, I thought that the artwork was actually very, very telling, especially with reflective surfaces. I really liked that because obviously Bruce Banner is not one person, but two. And a lot of what the Hulk is trying to deal with that relationship, the Hulk with Bruce and Bruce with the Hulk. And this kind of takes a moment to really do a little deep dive so that they can really, really talk to each other. So for a kind of a self-contained type of story, I thought it was done very well. I really enjoyed it. And it's a reason why, you know, Immortal Hulk has been so good with L. Ewing, even though I think that book should maybe wrap up soon also. I haven't read a lot of classic Hulk, but you know, from the Immortal Hulk on, it's been very nice to get a very good, consistent Hulk series. And then for Declan to come in and do this one issue, I thought it was also very, very telling.
Yeah, I loved it too. And the thing that I liked about it, I mean, again, we don't want to spoil, but there were some hints with the interaction with the Immortal Hulk with one of the other characters that shows up, a character that's kind of linked to Bruce's past. Mm-hmm. But that character's interaction with the Immortal Hulk, it kind of reminded me that maybe we are getting to the end, or made me think maybe we are getting to the end of Al Ewing's run, and we're going to get back to the kind of Banner on the Run, because it, like Manny said, it did have a little bit of that interaction with the way the Immortal Hulk leaves Bruce every morning, and Bruce is kind of out on his own. And it reminded me of my, you know, my favorite kind of Hulk stories are the ones like reminds me of the Bill Bixby TV show where he's kind of out on his own. Mm-hmm. I got a little bit of that, like a hint of maybe more of that's to come. I would love the Immortal Hulk whenever it wraps up. I mean, I want Al Ewing to finish telling the story he's telling, but I would love to go back to that. I mean, that's my favorite kind of Hulk stuff. And then the next would be the kind of the Professor Hulk, where he's all kind of one personality and stable, and just being really super heroic. Like one of those two kind of Hulks is my favorite. So anyway, did you get a chance to read this, Jay? You have any thoughts?
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. Reading a book like this helps me to remind me that comic books aren't just for kids. You know, they're people that have, you know, a little intelligence to them, because there's a story there. You know, it's more to in depth of the character. It's not just like Miami is saying, you know, Hulk smash. It's not, we're past that point now. We're just got more of, you know, the what's really going on behind the scenes inside the mind of Bruce and the Hulk.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Well, what's your first book? What do you want to talk about?
I'm going to go with Future State that everybody loves. I'm going to do Catwoman. This is the Great Train Robbery, the final. It's written by Ram V. Artist is Otto Schmidt, and Tom Napolitano does letters. And so from the last episode or last issue, Catwoman and them are robbing or attempting to rob a train, or, you know, stop it. We see, you know, Catwoman has like kind of self-reflection in the beginning of the story, you know, kind of, you know, I guess like self-doubt, I guess. But, you know, during the fight scene, there's a lot of fight scenes in this, you know, and then there's finally the meeting of, you know, the two main characters, you know, they're, you know, they get all happy, yay. But it doesn't last very long, because, you know, we have a surprise ending at the end of, you know, what they have to do to keep the mission going, I guess you can say. But they kind of leave it again with Future State. I guess it just leave you knowing there's, it says the end, but, you know, that's not the way they're going to wrap it up. There's got to be another part to this. Because they, you know, they leave a little, I guess, sign behind, I guess, at the end of the train when, you know, when they do their thing.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, we already know that's been announced there's going to be a Future State Gotham. So it's been these stories that have been in Gotham, we know they're not going to wrap up. And it's kind of, I don't know. I feel two ways about it. I mean, I think we talked about it before. And certainly when we talk about these Future State books on our Future State Friday episodes, we talk about it more in depth. But the thing is, we were saying, well, why should we care? These books are only two issues long. So why should we bother to pick them up? And then it turns out, well, no, maybe it is important, because these stories are going to tie into to stuff that's going on. So now they are giving us what we want. The problem is that for the majority of the books, they're not very good. So we don't want them to continue. It's almost like, oh, maybe it was a blessing they're only two issues long, so we can forget about this not very good storytelling and get back to the regular DCU. Well, now they're going to be continuing these stories. And now it's a situation where we don't want them to continue. And if they don't matter, great, because they're not very good. So it's kind of tough. Now, that's not necessarily the case here. This is one of the better ones. But still, I'd rather just wrap up and Ram V go back to telling the story he was already telling in Catwoman, which has been really, really good. So,
yeah, it's just a hard book to kind of talk about, because, you know, there's a lot going on, but you want to give away the story.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the case of with us trying to review a lot of the Future State books spoiler free, because they are only two issues long. There's not really much you can talk about other than, hey, it's good. The art's good, you know, and that's the case here. Otto Schmidt does an incredible job with the art and the colors, and Ram V does a great job with dialogue, and it's paced very well. Like I said, this is one of the best Future State books. This is Catwoman is one of the ones, one of three probably Future State books that I maybe four that I would recommend. Yeah, pick it up. It's worth reading. But because it's they're trying to cram everything into two issues, there's not like it, there's no room for the story to breathe, and there's not much we can talk about without spoiling. So if you want to know more, again, just go listen to our Future State Friday episodes, because we get into spoilers and break it down for you. All right, well, let me move on to my first book. It's Iron Man number 6 from writer Christopher Cantwell. We have art by Kafu, colors by Frank DiArmada, and letters by Joe Caramagna. Holy crap. Holy crap. Holy crap. And that's all I have to say about this book. No, I'm kidding. So we saw at the end of last issue, issue 5, Iron Man finally came face to face with Korvac, and Korvac basically broke his neck. And so Tony was not in great shape. So he's got to deal with that, figure out a way to still stop Korvac from going to Galactus's ship and stealing all of Galactus's power. That's Korvac's plan that we learned about, I think, in issue 3 or 4. He's going to go to the ship and then steal all of Galactus's power and then use that power to remake the universe into a paradise. Except nobody has any confidence that what Korvac thinks is a paradise is really going to be good for your average inhabitant of the universe or the galaxy. So Tony's got to stop it. And like I said, he's in bad shape when this issue starts off, and throughout the issue, he finds a way to not necessarily be okay, but figures out a way to keep fighting so that he can continue, so that he can go and confront Korvac. We also saw that James Rhodes was kidnapped by Korvac, and so there's a little bit of a resolution there. But the biggest takeaway from this issue, why I'm like, holy crap, holy crap, Tony's mad. Tony is pissed off. He's not going to take any more crap from Korvac, and it's great to see Tony just kind of like get fired up, right? Throughout the series so far, and it's been great what Cantwell's been doing. Tony's been sort of filled with doubt, right? Like, he's been trying to get back to basics. Like, who am I? Like, take away the you know, billions of dollars, and take away the Playboy persona, and take away the you know, chairman of the Avengers, and take away all the trappings, and try to get back to who he is at his core as a person. And he's had some doubts, like, who am I when I'm not Iron Man? Right, he's kind of had a crisis of confidence and a crisis of identity, and trying to figure out who he is, and that all kind of gets pushed to the side here, because now it's to the point where the doubts are gone, because what Tony is, Tony's mad, and he's not going to take Korvac's crap anymore. And there's a great scene where somebody confronts Tony. One of the bad guys confronts Tony at the end of the issue to try to prevent him from going after Korvac, as Korvac's headed to Dao 2, which is Galactus' ship. And it's awesome. You know, it's a little reminiscent of maybe a scene from Indiana Jones a little bit. But yeah, Tony's fired up, and it's just great to see. And the art by Kafu is incredible. The color work is just perfect. It's got a real sort of sheen to it, which, you know, suits this type of story with all the, you know, metallic armors and technology and whatnot. So, yeah, it's been a really, really fun ride so far. Either of you guys get a chance to read Iron Man 6?
No, I'm way behind on Iron Man.
Yeah.
Like, haven't read issue 1, behind.
Wow.
Behind myself, sorry.
all good. All right, well, what about you, Manny? What's your next book?
My next book is the final future state book for the next Batman, which is the next Batman number 4, and I'm just going to read out all of the all of the creators for it, because there's also the Batgirls and also Gotham City Sirens in the back. So John Ridley, Vita Ayala, and Paula Sevensbergen are the authors. And then you have art by Lara Braga with Nick Darrington, Aniki, Emanuela Lippuccino with Rob Hayes and Wade Van Grabadger. And then colorists are Avish Priyanto, Trish Muliv Hill, and Josh Kellis. In this issue, we still see Jace Fox, as he wants to be known, the Batman. He's trying to protect two at this point murderers who would be killed actually by the peacekeepers, just because of the fact that they were wearing masks, and obviously they're trying to kill Batman as well. Shoot, and I say this because they have a shoot on site order, which is a theme that is played on throughout the issue about there's a couple of people talking about whether they think it's right or wrong, and overall this Jace, this Batman is trying to get these these criminals to the police officers so that they can be tried, so that they can have a, so that they can be arrested properly instead of just killed. It really speaks to kind of the who Batman is as far as the morals that he stands for and wanting to do what is right. Because he could have just as easily left them, because as we see throughout the issue, it's no walk in the park trying to get these people over to the detective at the precinct, but he's going to do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. Also, in that aspect, I really did like that about the book. Other than that, it's just there's just this disconnect between, you know, character we haven't necessarily seen much all of a sudden taking over the mantle, especially when it's Jace Fox instead of Luke, who's obviously has been under a cowl before, and also just his motivations to be Batman. I'm not sure that they're just they come out very well, and all that just kind of it really, I hate to say it this way, but just kind of like an imposter Batman, and you know, doesn't really resonate with me. And so in that aspect, it was an okay story, and I get what John really was trying to do here, but it just didn't feel like Batman. It felt more like it was like watching Duke or somebody try to be Batman at the, for a period of time. The second story in it, which was the Batgirls, sees the fact that Cass and Stephanie are coming together to take on the Magistrates Detention Center, and they kind of put together just an old-fashioned prison riot in order to get everybody riled up, and they go looking for Bruce, but they find somebody else in the meantime. It actually was a pretty cool story, had a good ending, and it may have been overall between the two issues that we see it in a better story than the main title. I wish we could have maybe even seen a little bit more of the Batgirls. That seemed a little bit more fun. Gotham City Sirens, I just kind of breezed through it. I didn't really see, didn't really read too much into that one. So there's not much I can actually say about that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, I thought Gotham City Sirens, I thought this issue of it was better than the, like, at least I could understand it had a plot as opposed to the first one. I agree with you on Batgirls. I thought it was by far the best story in the book. The problem that I have, and I feel bad for John Ridley with the next Batman, first he's going to be Tim Fox, or, you know, originally they said Luke Fox, and that's why Batman 19 or 20 or whatever it was went crazy. And then they said Tim Fox, and then his went crazy. But originally it was going to be John Ridley doing 5G, and he was, you know, this whatever Fox it was going to be under the cowl was going to take over, and he was going to get to tell the story. Now he's telling some of it here in the next Batman. And we know there's going to be a digital story. There's going to be another print story. There's going to be some in, you know, Gotham, Future State Gotham. It's like the guy, poor guy is having to jump around from title to title. They just, like, just give him a book called Next Batman and let him do his thing instead of him trying to do, you know, this future story here and this other story over here. And like I said it on one of our Future State Friday episodes, that like it feels so formulaic, like just a procedural TV show. And John Ridley, we know, is a screenwriter, so maybe that's part of the reason. But it feels like to me, with all the family drama going on with the Foxes, like an episode of Empire or something like that, where
it's not
It's not even about Batman. It's just about their family. And I don't pick up a Batman title to read a story about the Foxes and their family issues. I just don't. I'm sorry.
I think that's all part of my disconnect is. But yeah. And you know, probably what it is also is Batman's probably not the right title for John Ridley, because we see what he's doing over there in his other book at the Dark on their Dark Label.
Yeah. Can you put him on
the Black Label? Lightning?
Can you put John Ridley on Black Lightning, please?
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know, and the thing is like right now, I don't know if they understand the caliber of a writer that they have right now in John Ridley, that they're just kind of wait. I mean, I get it. Future State, it was paid for. We got to do it. We've been through it a billion times. But going forward, you know, the other history of the DC universe. Yeah. Put him on a title like a Black Lightning. Give yeah, him.
But I mean, in DC's defense, they're like, man, John Ridley's got a high profile. We know DC is all about Batman now. The Batman is their, it's their moneymaker. It's what pays the bills. So maybe they will put him on there, but we got to get him on Batman first and build him up following.
But you and I know that certain writers only work on certain.
Yes, I understand that, but I can see why they're doing it the way they're doing it. I totally can. So anyway,
yeah, there's suits, bro.
Yeah. Well, the rumor is that there's going to be some ultra rich fans buying DC. So maybe they'll run it better than, by the way, everybody, it's not me, just in case you were wondering. I'm not buying any properties from DC. All right, Jay, what do you have up next?
Well, let's look at Future State. Wonder Woman, I know, part two. And the second story in the back is Nubia. It's part two of that one also. Sorry. The writer is Becky Cluen with Michael Conrad. Art is by Jen Partel. And letters by Pat. That's it. So from the first part one, this is part two. So we know that there's something called the Undoing that's, you know, pretty much taking over the whole universe. We see Darkseid couldn't stop it. Superman couldn't stop it. So this one, we got battle that continues. Wonder Woman's trying to find out if she can actually be the one to stop it. It turns out that just her and another hero are the last people there. I'm not going to say who it is, but there's just two heroes left. And the ending is pretty much what you expect it to be, I guess. And it just seemed really quick. It really wasn't a lot of meat and potatoes in the story. It was just there and there. And you're like, that's it? And you're like, yeah, that's it. The artwork was okay. I mean, I think it fit the story. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I really feel like this book, the whole both issues, like you buy this book because you're a fan of Jen Bartel's artwork. But I guess it is going to tie into the regular Immortal Wonder Woman title going forward. I think, you know, with what happened with Wonder Woman at the end of Death Metal and how, you know, she ends up here, we're going to get the middle of that's going to get filled in. Whether or not it's any good or not, that's another story entirely. So
yeah, I just feel like they kind of rushed that. I think they could have do it one more, you know, one more. Like, I think it would have made more sense. I just feel like they rushed this story.
Yeah. It has its problems for sure, but it's gorgeous. It's beautiful to look at. Like the art is just gorgeous.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. It was only worth looking at. I think about the middle of it, I was like, oh, this isn't going anywhere. Nothing's gonna happen. Yeah. But I was like, this is gorgeous though. I mean, yep. So again, wasted art. Yep. I wouldn't say wasted, but you know, just. Jesus.
What about the
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, what about the Nubia story?
All right, so that one's written by McKinley, art by Lilith Martinez, letters by Becky Carey. Letters by I think it's Mike Morales or he
inks by Mark Morales, colors by Emilia Lopez. Yeah.
So this one pretty much focuses on Nubia, I guess, from the second part of the story. She's trying to stop guess something getting stolen from an artifact. And then she runs into Circe.
And Grail.
Yeah. So I guess they have a past, but it pretty much leaves it going to the end where she kind of offers her something and that's pretty much it. And you know, I don't want to give it away, but that's pretty much it. She's trying to stop something from getting stolen from an artifact. And then she runs into her and I'll try to offer her a deal.
Yeah, it's by
and that far, was it. And I was like, that's it. Okay.
It's by far the better story. Because it shows the thing that the second story does, and this is true in the first part and the second part, it shows how powerful Nubia is as a character. Just as capable, just as powerful, just as great a character as Wonder Woman, as Diana is. You know, since her twin sister, and she gets forgotten. And I recently interviewed the writer L.L. McKinney about her Nubia graphic novel that's coming out, Real One, which will be releasing that pretty soon. So look for that. And we did touch on this as well. And L would love to write more Nubia, and I'd love to read more Nubia from like, I mean, I'm not a huge Wonder Woman fan. That being said, I think Nubia is a more interesting character. than Wonder Woman, at least how Wonder Woman's been handled over the last few years. So anyway, let me move on to my next book. I'm not even sure what it is. I'm trying to find it. Sorry. Oh, MODOK, Head Games, from writers Jordan Blum and Patton Oswalt. We have art by Scott Hepburn, colors by Carlos Lopez, letters by Travis Lanham. So some of you may know Patton Oswalt. Like, the name may sound familiar. He's a huge comic fan. He's also a comedian. He was on King of Queens, and he's currently on AP Bio. He's a stand-up comedian. He's been in a movie. He's
Remy the Rat.
Yeah, Remy. He was Remy the Rat in Ratatouille. So he's a huge comic fan, and he's writing this book with Jordan Blum about MODOK, who the whole Head Games part of it comes from the fact that MODOK is having these like these visions that he used to have a family, like a wife and a daughter, and it's kind of thrown him for a loop. And in the first issue, it causes problems between him and Hydra. And so he kind of goes out on his own, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. And in the second issue, he teams up with Tony Stark and goes to this, this auction, this like black market auction, to try to find out who's been messing with his head. And then this third issue, Gwenpool shows up. Gwenpool's been hired to take him out. And so he has to fight her off. And it's just as crazy and as wild as you think it will be with Gwenpool in the story. I'm not a big Deadpool fan, so obviously Gwenpool takes it even further than Deadpool does in terms of wackiness and insanity and makes no sense whatsoever. That being said, this comic is supposed to be fun. And it is. It is fun. Even for me not liking Gwenpool, it's fun. I mean, you just look at the cover. The cover is like MODOK, and he's got this contraption around him, like the scaffolding around him. And Gwenpool has climbed up on top of the scaffolding. And there's a hole in the top of MODOK's head, like where his brain is, giant brain. And there's like a mixing spatula there that you could – it has been pulled up and is dripping brain matter back into this giant hole. So it's clear that this mixer, Gwenpool has, you know, put this mixer down inside MODOK's brains and mixed his brains around. And that's pretty much how you feel after you read this book. Cause it's just wild and crazy and zany, and the colors are really bright, which sort of suits the story that's being told. And yeah, it's just a really crazy wild ride. And then right at the end, there's a little bit of a reveal that MODOK may finally get some answers to where these visions have come from, who put them in his head, and that sort of thing. So the other thing that we should mention is that these creators, the writers, Patton Oswalt and Jordan Blum, they're the writers that are going to be working on the Disney Plus MODOK animated series. So this is kind of a prelude to what we might see in that cartoon. It's going to be crazy and wild and zany, and you're going to get other, you know, guest stars from the Marvel universe just pop up randomly, like Gwenpool or like Tony Stark and that kind of thing. And so really, really fun story. It doesn't take itself too seriously. You don't have to read anything else or know anything about Gwenpool in order to enjoy this. It's just good, fun comics. So, all right, Manny, what do you have up next?
Up next, I also have a Marvel book, and it is X-Men Legends number one. And so the point of this series is that they're going to be breaking out classic creative teams for X-Men or writers, bringing them back. They're going to be doing stories in between classic eras that are going to be in continuity. So in this case, they have for writer Fabian Nicieza, with art by Brett Booth, ink by Adelso Corona, and colors by Guru Effects. Did I get his name right? Did I butcher it?
No, that's right. Fabian Nicieza. And yeah. And to Manny's point, so these are stories that, like this one, for example, the story takes place after X-Men number 39 from 1991. And so they're going back and filling in gaps. And a lot of these are stories that, like this one, for example, Fabian Nicieza wanted to tell the story way back then, but he just didn't get a chance to, for whatever reason. Probably a lot of times it's because of other crossovers or events. They just didn't get a chance. So it's going to be interesting for new readers, because Manny didn't read any of that stuff back then. But, and correct me if I'm wrong, Manny, but reading this made you want to go back and read, like, hey, let me go back and read some stuff from that era. So
exactly,
I think that's a lot of what Marvel is hoping for here. So anyway, give us your thoughts on the issue, Manny.
Well, it's a fantastic idea because they rebooted X-Men and they complicated it so quick that I'm back to not knowing what to read or what to do with the current run of X-Men. So I thought this was a brilliant idea in order to get me into X-Men, because I want to read X-Men. And so now I kind of have a jumping on point with X-Men Legends 1, and now I can go back and read the previous stories from Fabian, and then so on and so on as they release other stories. In this case, this one actually takes place with Cyclops and Havok, and then the Shi'ar have returned to Earth, and they're looking for the one they call the Forsaken One. And at the same time, you have the Summers brothers' grandparents being held hostage. But in order to let them go, they need to find the Forsaken One. It's kind of cool. You see certain characters appear that, some are very familiar, some are not. And definitely the feel of the book has that classic X-Men look, the classic look of, you know, Cyclops and Havok and some of the other characters. So it's something I really, really liked, because it felt like I was reading something older, and it got me excited to keep reading X-Men. So despite the fact that I don't necessarily know all the details of what's going on, I have enough in this current story to keep me going. Kind of like when I've been reading Black Label's American Vampire, they do a good job at kind of filling me in. And then I'll go back and read the rest of it later. And in this case, I think I have a whole lot of X-Men after I'm done with this to catch up on, in order to appreciate the story a little bit more. But like I said, it is jumping on this story for me, especially because it has classic costumes and kind of classic storytelling, is a whole lot more comfortable than trying to jump on whatever they're doing right now, which is just insane.
Yeah, it's a problem. We've talked about it on our X Tuesdays. The fact that so many people feel like you have to read every X-Men title right now to understand what's going on. People, they don't want to buy 9 X books a month, you know, they want to buy one or two. So that's a failure of what Hickman's been doing, I feel like. So anyway, yeah, it was great. It was a blast from the past, and Brett Booth is the perfect, you know, he has a little bit of that 90s style. Well, some would say a lot of that 90s style to his art. So it was great. It was pretty awesome to see. So, all right, Jay, what do you have up next?
Well, we'll stick with Marvel. We'll do Black Widow. It's The Ties That Binds, the final storyline. It's written by Kelly Thompson, art by Alina Casagrande, with Rafael de la Torre, color by Gordy Bellary.
No, you had it. Jordi Belair.
Rats. And the letters by Corey Pettit. And then the covers are by Adam Hughes, which I like. The covers are pretty nice.
Yeah, really great cover.
I like the story a lot, because I've always been a Black Widow fan, but this one was kind of cool because you read the previous issues, you understand that she had this perfect life. You know, they lied to her that she had the fiance, the kid, and everything was perfect. But now she realized that it's not like that at all. So she's being, rescued by Yelena and a Winter Soldier, and they're trying to get her out. Of course, there's more fight scenes. A couple other characters show up, and it's kind of funny because even Hawkeye kind of mentions it, like towards Wednesday, get away from all this, that, you know, in her perfect life, she, you know, didn't have a place for, you know, for him in it. It was a little joke in there because one of the characters or one of the things in her life has a X-Men name. And that's why she was like, well, don't dwell on it. It just probably didn't get it right, I guess she was trying to say, but you know, there's more to it, I think. But it's a really good story, because it kind of ties up, you know, the whole why they did it, and, you know, how, you know, they screwed it up because, you know, they tried to do something to her and they didn't work out, and they said that's how she got her memories back. But I like the artwork's great. The story is good. There's pretty cool fight scenes in it. And it ties it up pretty good. I mean, the ending's kind of sad, I guess, if you kind of look at it that way. But you know, she is who she is. You know, she has to march forward. You know, continue with who she is.
Yeah, I mean, I gave Kelly Thompson my writer of the year, and it wasn't just for this. You know, she's done a great job on Captain Marvel, but my God, I've never been a huge Black Widow fan. She's always been sort of a one-dimensional character to me. You know, she's a very strong female character who doesn't put up with anybody's crap, and that's great. But what Kelly's done is she found a way to humanize her and make her more relatable. And yeah, there is there's a sadness to the story that she told here, a brutalness that happened. And even though it happened last issue, I'm not going to spoil it. But it was like when it happened last issue, I was like, holy shit. Like, I didn't expect that. It was a gut punch.
Yeah, it was kind of sad, but it's same thing, you know. That's she can't do that. She can't do that yet. It's not time.
Well, I mean, maybe not, but I mean, you feel for her because she finally seemed happy. So,
Yeah.
you know, it was rough. So yeah, I agree. It was a great issue. Great way to wrap it up. But what has me most intrigued is at the end, it talks about, okay, now we're going to be, and Black Widow herself says, you know, it's time to try something different. She's always been who she is, and she sees that she can grow, and evolve. And we're kind of told that she's going to, you know, new costume, new mission. And we'll see. So I'm kind of thinking maybe she'll take a page out of Queen Latifah's book. You know, Queen Latifah's in that Equalizer series on CBS right now. Maybe
Oh boy.
Tasha's gonna, what's that?
That oh boy. Yeah.
Have you watched it?
No. The only reason it stayed on in our place was because it was right after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I didn't see any of it either. I know some people are complaining, some other people are saying, ah, it's fine. But anyway, my point being, are we going to see Black Widow like hang out a shingle or put an ad in the newspaper, like, you know, helping out the less fortunate? So I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. But she's come a long way. I mean, from her first appearance of Tales of Suspense, she didn't look like she does now at all.
Yeah, she has come a long way, and in Kelly Thompson I trust, so I'm
Yeah.
curious to see where it goes. All right, well, let me get to my next book. It's Stillwater from writer Chip Zdarsky. We have art by co-creator Ramon K. Perez, Mike Spicer on colors, Russ Wooten on letters. Holy crap. The bleep hits the fan right here. It jumps around a little bit. We see a flashback back to 1999, right after the event first happened in Stillwater, that, you know, for whatever reason caused who's ever in the town to become immortal and to heal from just about any kind of wounds you can imagine. And then we get a little background on Ted, kind of the main enforcer, I guess we'd say, of the judge, who, you know, sends him out to do kind of all the dirty work, as it were. And we get a little insight into Ted. And the insight, it doesn't change our minds about who Ted is. He's pretty much a scumbag and a dick, and deserves to meet a horrible end. And we see that he, even unbeknownst to the judge, has kind of planted some seeds for some real violent actions to occur should they be necessary. And what we've seen in recent issues with some members of the town wanting to kind of loosen the restrictions that the judge has had in place for so long, under the guise of protecting the town, but really has cost them all their freedom. They're living under a fascist dictator at this point, basically. And we saw last issue that at a town meeting, all that kind of came to reached a boiling point and came to a head. And now half this issue is about, well, maybe less than half, but this issue shows us, okay, now what's going to happen, right? Like, Ted's finally going to get to sort of have the freedom that he's wanted, to really cut loose in the borders of the town themselves, rather than being sent out as an enforcer. And so, yeah, it's gonna be pretty rough. In fact, in the letters column in the back of the book, it says, if you couldn't tell, lines are being drawn and war is coming to this small town. Who will survive? Probably everyone since it's Stillwater, but after all, but there sure as hell going to be a lot of pain coming. So yeah, it's going to be the people picking sides one way or the other. You know, supposed freedom or supposed security with Ted leading his band of sadistic warriors, I guess you'd call them, into battle against others. And will they be able to stand up for it? And what is that sort of fight to the death, you know, quote unquote, like when you're fighting against other people who are going to survive any kind of wound that you give them? It's going to be interesting to see. So it's just an incredible book. Really, really great. This ends the first arc. So I hope that there's not a break between issues 6 and 7, but there very well may be. Sometimes the Image books take a break and then wait for the trade to come out and then start back up. So I guess we'll see. I don't know off the top of my head if the next issue has been solicited for March or not. So anyway, what do you have up next, Manny?
Up next, I have an Aftershock title, and that's going to be Shadow Doctor number 1. And what makes this very, very interesting is that it's actually a true story based on the writer's grandfather named Nathaniel, and the writer we're talking about is Peter Calloway. The artwork on the book is handled by Georges Gently, and colors by Juancho. The story is about Nathaniel Calloway, who is a Black man that graduated from medical school in the early 1930s. Unfortunately, we know that back then it wasn't very favorable for African Americans to get any kind of work, or actually to even get around in some areas. So because of this, he's unable to get any work at the hospitals in Chicago because of the color of his skin. Wasn't able to get a loan from a bank to start his own practice for the same reason. And so he had to look for another source of money like anybody else would. And of course, this being the prohibition era in Chicago, he turned to none other than Al Capone, to the mafia. And so this is a story of what happened then. And it was a great first issue. It sets everything up very nicely. And I'm all in on this story, just so the fact that it's a true story, and it's going to be so meaningful for Calloway to write this about something that happened in his family is amazing. And I'm glad that he's getting this platform to do it. So it'll be it's one of those stories that, you know, we'll get to see what somebody has to go through just because of the fact that, you know, their liberties didn't have them back then for wrong reasons. And so, yeah, it's a good book, and I'm glad that Aftershock is doing it. The artwork is okay. Nothing special, nothing great either. There were some pages that I think that there was like a lack of backgrounds. There's one I know that where one of the guys is like shooting a gun. They're out in the middle of a field, but in the background is just white compared to some of the other panels, and it really looked out of place. But other than that, good book, great story so far, and I think that overall, once it's complete, it's going to make for an awesome trade. You're muted, Jace.
Yeah, I realized that. Sorry. Yeah, I read it because it was an Aftershock book, and I'm a fan of Peter Calloway. You know, I loved his last space race he did with Aftershock, but I didn't have any expectations. You know, I read the solicit and I was like, I don't know. It's, you know, true story. You never think it's going to be that interesting. I was so blown away. Like, it's so good. If Manny hadn't talked about it, I was going to. So yeah, it was spectacular. So did you get a chance to read it, Jay?
Yeah, I liked it. It was good.
Yeah.
Just like I said, with books for me, it's either the artwork's going to take me in or the story. The artwork, like I said, isn't that great, like Manny said, but the story has me.
Yeah, yeah, really good.
So, yeah, one of the two's got to grab me, and that was the story itself.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the artwork. I thought it kind of suited it. You don't want to be too over the top, especially if it's a true story. But I get what you're saying. The backgrounds are kind of light. And that's kind of, I mean, Georges Gently, that's kind of his style. It does have a little bit more of a kind of a, I don't want to say a muted style, but maybe, you know, it's not over the top. You know, he's better at doing these kind of books where it's slice of life rather than like superhero stuff. So I think he's actually a good choice because he conveys emotion really well, and his people look realistic. So, all right, what book do you have up next, Jay?
I'm gonna go with Marvel, Planet of the Symbiotes. What I like about it is like the first one was just two stories about like the characters that they don't really talk much about, and the same thing in this. They got American Kaiju and the Hornet. American Kaiju is written by Mark Bernardin, art by Kyle Holtz, and Rachel Rosenberg does color for both stories. For the Hornet, the writer is Godfrey Thorne, and yep. The artist is Jane Bezalel. Yeah. So for the American Kaiju, you know, it's pretty much like a Hulk story. It's pretty much smash and destroy, you know, all the symbiotes pretty much. It was good. I liked it. It was, you know, the colors weren't bright. They're dark. And I like that because, you know, he's a monster. So it's kind of cool. I like it. And you pretty much have the bubbles that pretty much tell you what he's thinking during the whole, you know, what's going on and what he's got to do and why he's doing it. So it's kind of neat. But it goes real quick. So I was like, that's it. So I was like, dang, I wanted more. And the second one is about the Prowler. And he used to be a bad guy, of course, but, you know, he turned good. Hobby Brown. And pretty much the story just starts off. I'm not going to say too much, but he just starts off with a date. And that's when, you know, the invasion starts. So what I like about it is just, you know, they're showing other heroes and people who want to be heroes. What's going on during the King of Black, I guess, in the Marvel Universe at the time. It was a good story. It was bright. The colors were a lot brighter with that one.
Yeah. I mean, Jeffrey Thorne, everybody knows how I feel about him at this point. No surprise, no surprise that he takes on Hobie Brown. And I mean, I didn't read it. I just flipped through it. But yeah, he makes Hobie Brown out to be like this incredible hero.
Yeah.
Just incredible abilities and, you know, cool head or whatever. I mean, Hobie Brown that we've seen previously as the Prowler has been kind of a bumbling. You know, that's kind of the reason he always got caught with Spider-Man. Like he couldn't get out of his own way. He wasn't very capable. And now all of a sudden Jeffrey Thorne takes over and he's, you know, the most experienced, greatest hero ever. He's Batman. Like what?
Yes. Yeah. I was kind of confused with that too. I was like, well, what did he get all those cool gears? Like, he never had that before. What's going on? But I was like, all right, I guess he's just doing it for the story. I don't know. But
yeah. I feel like Jeffrey Thorne writes fan fiction. It's not even real comics. Wants them to be cool, so they're cool. So
yeah.
All right, well, let me talk about my next book. It's from Valiant. It's Savage number one. It's written by Max Bemis. The art is by Nathan Stockman. Colors are by Triona Farrell. Letters by Hassan Atsmano Elhau. Oh man, where do I start with this? It's so weird. Like Valiant used to be like these really, they felt like really traditional superhero stories, but like leveled up, like the evolution of the superhero story, like to make it take the next step, make it more serious, make not necessarily for an adult reader, but just, you know, it wasn't so much that you couldn't believe the stuff that was happening. You know, it had a level of realism, but it was still superheroes and it was cool. And now I feel like Valiant with the artists and the writers they're bringing on, they're going for like the quirky independent type audience, you know, people that like that kind of stuff. And while that stuff can be okay if it's executed really well, there's a disconnect there because it doesn't make sense with the stories that we've had with these characters so far. So if you like the first Savage series and you're expecting this to have the same tone, it kind of doesn't. And it's not that this is a bad story, but Valiant, to me, it never felt like an independent comic company. It always felt like they were up there rivaling Marvel and DC in quality, if not exceeding them. And now this just feels like another independent comic, you know, just kind of, it's okay. You know, it's not terrible. There's nothing I can point to like in the art or the story and say, well, that's awful, you know, but there's also nothing here where I'm like, well, that's unique. That's interesting. I want to read more. Like I read it and I was just like, eh, okay. I probably won't pick. And I know I always say you got to read at least two issues. And so maybe I will flip to the next issue, but there's nothing original here. Everything I read from Valiant lately, it just feels like, yeah, I kind of been there, done that. And it's just sad because, man, I used to live and breathe Valiant books, you know, like they were so good. And it's just kind of sad to see how they've declined and how they're just not special anymore. So I guess if you're a big fan of Savage, check it out. You might like it. There's also a preview of Shadow Man in the back here from Cullen Bunn and John Davis Hunt, who are two creators that I absolutely love. But this doesn't hold a candle to what Andy Diggle was doing with the character. I want that story ended. And I know Andy told me he had more and wanted to keep going. So I don't know why, like, why do this? And not to say that this preview is bad. I actually enjoyed this preview more than I enjoyed the Savage book, and I'll definitely pick up Shadow Man number one. But that being said, I wish I'd gotten the end of Andy Diggle's story instead of this story. And maybe I would have wanted this story after Andy Diggle's story. I don't know. There's also a house ad in the back for Harbinger by Jackson Lansing and Colleen Kelly. And I want to say that those are the guys that were going to do Bloodshot before, or am I remembering that wrong? No, I might be remembering that wrong. It might have been Zach Thompson and his writing partner who, why can't I remember who that is? But they ended up going over and doing some X-Men work. There's this house ad in the back for Harbinger from Jackson Lansing and Colleen Kelly. And again, I'm fans of these guys, but just based on the artwork, when you look at it, I can't help but think, just like I was saying before, about it looks like just your, you know, typical independent book. You know, the art's a little quirky, it's got bright colors. I don't know. It doesn't have that feel that the Valiant books used to have, where you used to say, man, those books are so great, you know? So I don't know. Zach Thompson, Lonnie Nadler. That's who I was trying to think of. I think they were the guys that were going to do Bloodshot. But anyway, yeah. Pick up Savage if you're a big Savage fan or Valiant fan, I guess. And let me know what you think of it. Like, reach out to me on social media. I'm real curious if this is scratching a niche for other Valiant fans, other diehard Valiant fans and fans of the previous Savage miniseries. Cause I just thought this was kind of mediocre. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't hold a candle to what they were doing before. They don't have the creators at all. I mean, they had Eric Eisner, they had, you know, Joshua Dysart, they had, you know, LaFuente, they had, Jeff Lemire, Lewis, I mean, just
go Suyan, Matt Kent. Yeah.
You know, and then none of them are there. Yeah. And so, you know, with that, you know, there's no passion behind the people who are running it. And you can tell, right?
It's not like these are bad creators, you know?
No, but the people, the editors, the people, I think, you know, the higher ups are the ones who are just not, there's no fire down there for the characters, for the properties, for the creative teams. It's just, let's put out the next one and just try to make it fun.
I don't know. I mean, I think they still definitely care about what they're putting out, but I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. So anyway, what's your last book?
My last book is an Image book, and that's going to be Ha Ha number 2 of 6. this one obviously is written by W. Maxwell Prince, who we all know from the amazing Ice Cream Man series. And the artwork on this particular issue is handled by Zoe Thorogood. And then there is a fantastic variant cover by Martin Simmons. That cover, I got to find that cover. I got to get it. It is, I love it. Really, really good. Really cryptic, really different than some of the other stuff I see out there. I mean, but even the main cover I thought was really pretty good. So this story is called Rudolph on the Road to Funville, and it's about a little girl who pretty much gets kidnapped by her mom. And we meet her in the beginning of the book, kind of or working at a, I think what would seem like a very strange, almost freak showish, like strip joint. And it's the story really of how she got there. And we learn a lot about her mom from when she was younger, and some of the mental issues that she had, and the journey that she takes her on, and kind of the trauma that she ends up facing because of her mom. It's actually a story that's not very original, I would say, as it's been told. I've seen it in other properties, but it's still a very, very messed up story, and it's really, really sad. It's funny how this book is called Ha Ha, but it's pretty tragic if you ask me, because you know there's always been that joke from Watchmen that where the clown goes to the therapist and then the therapist doesn't know he's the clown, and the therapist recommends that he goes to see him perform, and then he finds out at the end that no, I am the performer. So interesting that he decided to take clowns as for this miniseries. But man, the head of Maxwell Prince, man, I don't know what he's got up in there, but it's all kind of sad boy stuff.
You don't want to be in that head.
No, absolutely not.
Did you read it, Jay? Did you get a chance to check it out?
Yeah, it was the first thing I read. Yeah, it was good. I liked it. And like I said, his mind is so twisted, but it's like, man, because that one was actually kind of a sad story. You're like, wow. But it was good. It was good. It was a little deeper than the last one. That seems like they're getting better.
I'll say this now, but this is my book of the week.
All right. Fair enough. I still have not read anything from W. Maxwell Prince, so no reason to end my streak now, I guess. All right, what's your last book, Jay?
Mine's from Marvel. It'll be Spider-Woman number 9. The writer is Carla Pacheco. Artist Pierre Perez. Letters by Travis Leehan. And then I guess I got colors by Frank D'Armata. I hope I said that right.
Yep.
So from the previous issue, we know that the Spider-Woman, or you know, Jessica Drew, she took a experimental serum that was given to her by her clone mother, and she kind of like went a little crazy with Captain Marvel. So she right now she's kind of woken up with her nemesis, Octavia, and she ends up going to her lair. That's from the last story. So in this one, you know, she wakes up and she knows she's in the lair, but I don't know how to give away the storyline, but there's a lot more clones there of their mother, and she's trying to figure out why they have so many clones of her mother there. And they actually train with her nemesis, you know, so she's like, okay, what's going on here? There's some more, a lot of dialogue going back and forth, you know, why they did this, you know, why they made so many clones and this and that. And then they finally a fight breaks out. And the ending is kind of weird, because you didn't expect that they kind of happen, but it happens. And, you know, she kind of freaks out again with that serum. It wasn't bad. Like I said, I don't want to give too much of the story, because that story is not very much until you get to like the rest of the meat, you know, but I like the series. I do like the character a lot. And like I said, the cliffhanger at the end lets you wonder what's going to happen next.
Yeah, I mean, she's out here searching for this cure, not only for herself, but for her
niece, yeah.
Niece and her own child. And just when she thinks she's maybe, you know, going to get the cure, then Carla Pacheco pulls the rug out from under us. So yeah, this has been a really, really, I feel like Spider-Woman is such an underrated title right now. So good. Every time you think something's going to work out for Jessica, Carla Pacheco just like gut punches her again. So yeah, it's super, super brutal. And there's a very classic Marvel character that shows up in this issue. And whether or not he survives the issue is another question entirely. So yeah, really, really great. The artwork by Pierre Perez is great. The colors. Yeah. This is going to be one of those I think one of those runs that goes down as like, it could even be the definitive Spider-Woman run. I don't feel like we've necessarily had one of those, but even if it's not the definitive Spider-Woman run, I think a lot of people are going to talk about this. Like, this is a run by Carlo Pacheco that is going to need to be read in big chunks for people to really appreciate how great it is. All right, let me move on to my last book. It's The Last Ronin, story by Kevin Eastman, Peter Laird, and Tom Waltz, script by Tom Waltz and Kevin Eastman, layouts by Kevin Eastman, pencils and inks by Isao and Isaac Escoraza. Ben Bishop and Kevin Eastman handle the color assists, and colors by Luis Antonio Delgado, letters by Sean Lee. I really feel like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin number one was a huge seller. It was a huge hit. People read it and they immediately were clamoring for issue two. And we had to wait like 3 or 4 months before this next issue. And I don't know if it's that long wait where excitement has just died down. I'm not the biggest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan. They kind of, like, by the time the movies and the cartoons and all that came around, I'd kind of aged out of them, you know. Like, yeah, the comic was cool, but the comic was like for adults, and it was bloody and it was gory, and it wasn't anything like the cartoon in the movies, which were really aimed at selling toys to much younger kids. So I don't have that connection to TMNT like a lot of people do, and I never got that into the comic because, you know, at the age I was at the time, those comics like took off and they were so expensive. I just didn't have a chance to check them out. But, you know, so I was tangentially interested, but never enough to really dive into it. But there are a lot of people that love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and the IDW books sell really well. And they've been waiting for this kind of story where it's, you know, the original creators, you know, Laird and Eastman back on the character. And like I said, I think it was just a huge mistake from IDW to release that first issue if the second one wasn't already done, because it lost so much momentum. So I didn't think that this one was done as well as the first issue. I thought the first issue had more impact. This one it's still good and it's still interesting, but it's not wall-to-wall action like the first one was. And sometimes you do need that, you know, you need a down issue just because of the nature of you know, sequential storytelling, where if you want to have highs, you got to have lows to offset. But the problem is that you have such a long layoff that now it just feels like kind of meh. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to judge. This is going to be one of those where, okay, let me wait till I have the whole story before I can really give it a grade. So I'll just say, if you like the first issue and you're a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan, that you'll probably like this. But if you just thought the first issue was okay, or you're not the biggest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan, then maybe you want to just wait and pick it up and trade, because it you know, these books are expensive. This issue's $8.99, and it is a little bit larger than a regular comic book, but it's not as large as, say, like the Black Label books, you know, like Other History of the DC Universe or Batman Damned. It's not that big. It is like 68 pages or something like that. I can't tell you exactly because, you know, I have the press preview copy, and it's that this digital copy is 77 pages, but it also includes all the thousands of variant covers that they do. So I'm not sure. It might be 48 pages because there are quite a few. Yeah, I think it's 48 pages because I think there are quite a few covers. There's probably 20 covers, which would take it down to like 57. And then with advertising and all that, yeah. So probably a 48 pages of story. And, you know, $9 for 48 pages of stories, it's still pretty steep, even for, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and the art is pretty good. But yeah, maybe if you're not the biggest Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle fan, then maybe you can just hang out and wait for the collected edition. So either one of you guys get a chance to read this?
Yeah, I did. I like it. But I think you're right. The first one was awesome because it was different. But I think they took too long, because when I didn't even remember pulling it on my pull list. I think it was just one of those automatic things that Diamond does. If you get the first one, they just give you the second one.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, they did a second one. Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I forgot that they did that. All right, cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, I knew there was more coming. I think it's a 3-issue. And I knew there was more coming, and I knew it had been delayed. But I didn't, when I saw it on the list this week, I'm like, oh, Last Ronin number 2 finally coming out. Okay, well, let me check it out. And then, yeah, I read it, and it was kind of like, yeah, okay. It was all right.
Well, I'm like you. I think like our generation that read the black and white books, and that those were actually the cool ones, you know, because it was dark and it was adult. And it was like, yeah, this is cool. This isn't Marvel. This is, you know, something awesome. Then they did the whole kiddie thing. I think those kids grow up now. They see this and go, oh, hey, I like the Turtles still. I think that's the ones that are actually collecting it, because I don't. I mean, I like the Eastman books. That's it. It's not that. I ain't dealing with it. I still got my number 1 to 20. I just kept those. The rest I sold.
Yeah, well, and the other thing was they came out, even Archie Comics licensed it. And the Archie Comics ones were the ones based on the cartoon where April O'Neil was in the yellow jumpsuit and all that. So I never heard you talk about the Turtles, Manny. Were you a fan of the Turtles back in the day? That's more your...
I was a Power Ranger kid.
That makes sense. I can see you in a suit.
All right, well, let me give a rundown on some of the other books you might want to be on the lookout for today, everybody. From Aftershock, Miskatonic number 4, as well as We Live number 5, which I think that's the final issue of We Live, but I think there's going to be a second series. I didn't get a chance to read We Live number 5 yet, and I kind of feel like I need to go back and just reread the whole series 1 through 5, because that's a dense read. From Ahoy Comics, Second Coming, Only Begotten Son, number 2 from Mark Russell is out. Over at Boom, Saladin Ahmed's Abbott, 1973, has its second issue of 5 hitting stands today. Also, The Expanse, number 3, if you're a big fan of the sci-fi Amazon show. We've got Once in Future, number 16, from Kieran Gillen and Dan Mora, which is a very popular title, critically acclaimed. Manny's Power Rangers, number 4, from that Ryan Parrott, also hit stands today. Stranger Things, Dungeons and Dragons, number 4, another one of Manny's favorite titles. Over at DC, Batman, Catwoman, number 3, from Tom King and Clay Mann. That series has been so up and down. I really enjoyed the first issue. Second issue, I thought, was kind of hard to follow. Third issue gets it back on track, so I did enjoy that. We've got Future State Nightwing, number 2, which is another one of those good Future State titles. Future State Shazam, number 2. Future State Superman Worlds at War, number 2, is also on stands. Truth and Justice, number 1, is also out from DC today. Over at Image, in addition to the books that we talked about, Walking Dead Deluxe, number 9, which is the colorized version of the Robert Kirkman series that spawned many a TV episode. Over at Marvel, we talked about a lot of the books that are out. There's also a Black Knight number 1 facsimile edition hitting stands. Guardians of the Galaxy number 11. There's Iron Fist, Heart of the Dragon, written by Larry Hama. Its second issue, number 2 of 6, comes out today. King in Black number 4, the Donny Cates event that's going on at Marvel right now, is out. Alex Ross's Marvel number 5. Savage Avengers 18, another Donny Cates book, Thor number 12, hit stands. We already talked about Savage from Valiant, but over at Vault Comics from Paul Allure, Hollow Heart number 1, hit stands. They have a ROM homage cover. I had to pick it up, so we'll see what that's all about. I may talk about it on an upcoming episode. So that's going to do it. For the books that are hitting stands today, Manny already picked out his book of the week, being Haha. I'm having a tough time. Like I almost want to pick a book that somebody else talked about, because I almost feel like Shadow Doctor might be my favorite book of the week. That would be, I think, the second week in a row that I'd be picking an Aftershock book. But then again, Black Widow was very strong as well. So I don't know. Maybe I don't have, you know what? I'm going to go with Iron Man number 6 from Christopher Cantwell, just based on the holy crap moment I had when Tony gets pissed off at the end of the issue. What about you, Jay? Have a favorite book of the week that you read?
Oh yeah. Black Widow. I like the tie up at the end of it.
Yeah. All right. Good. I'm glad you picked that one because I almost wanted to pick that one. So just a reminder, everybody, about the Liam Sharp episode for the Kickstarter Spotlight. Be sure you go and check that out and support the campaign by pledging if you can. And if you can't, then at least share it on social media. So as always, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.